Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, April 2nd. I'm Ray Graff. It's that time again. It's time to welcome back our favorite avian experts, Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart, to answer your questions, all of them, about birding. If you have a question about birding, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is our number. 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Got a stack of emails already, so we're moving along here. It's a popular show. Call early. 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, Julie Hart, The Blades, and you after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop. It's WAMC's live, semi-live anyway, afternoon call-in talk show. Depends on how it goes. It could be fully live. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds today. And when we do that, we welcome our friends Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. Julie is the project coordinator of the New York Breeding Bird Atlas. She coordinates with thousands of volunteers to document bird breeding behaviors. She has a focus on bird conservation and citizen science. And boys and girls, you better mark down your scorecards, because Rich Guthrie is actually in the studio today. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC and now is the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. He's a world traveler, and it's nice to have him here in Studio A. The number to call with your birding question is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Several people have done that already. And, okay, that's it. Rich Guthrie, welcome back.
Hey, well, thank you. I feel right at home.
What took you so long?
I'm a slow driver.
Is that it? You're looking at
birds? Don't get behind me on the highway.
Hey, how is the, Julie Hart, how is the Breeding Bird Atlas going?
Good. We're gearing up for the final season, and right now lots of birds are busy getting ready to breed, so there's a lot of activity people probably have been noticing. Hopefully we'll get some questions about breeding behaviors today.
Let me ask you a question. You're both bird experts. Let's just say, and I'm not going to name any names, that a family has a bunch of birds living in a nest under their overhang on their back patio. And at times they thought they were cute, but now they're extremely obnoxious and leave their droppings on lawn chairs and on the, and frankly, the father of this family has had just about enough. How and when can he get rid of that nest without hurting any of the birds?
Let them be the judge.
No. Bad. That is a cop-out. No, humans.
As soon as they fledge.
Okay. And how do I know they've fledged?
When there's no more young in the nest.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
That'll be sometime August or September.
Yeah. What?
No, just kidding.
Are there house finches, I think, we've established before?
They used to be Phoebes, and I liked them very much.
They're quieter.
This person liked them very much.
Yes.
You heard about
and
them.
And then, well, assuming that I could tell when they have fledged.
Yeah. So when you stop seeing the adults coming in all the time and feeding young. Then you know that the young have left the nest.
Yeah.
And you can remove the nest safely.
And just put on a pair of gloves and take it and move it out, and they won't go back to it? I mean,
they might try to build a new nest. Like house finches or house sparrows and starlings and a lot of those birds that are nesting on houses will breed multiple times in a season.
Oh, I know.
And so once they start to build another nest, if they start building in a place where you don't want them, then you can just keep destroying the nest as soon as they build a little bit. So try to do it before they lay any eggs. You need to keep destroying
it,
and then they'll go somewhere else.
This person doesn't want to hurt the birds in any way, but he's sick and darn tired of them. So assuming that the nest is disposed with, then in this nook where they will invariably come back, should he put up some razor wire a la World War I frontiers, or what do you do?
Just some sort of a discouraging feature.
Yeah, net or...
Or
chicken wire or something.
Yeah, block it off or put a slanted a plane on it.
Okay.
Something to keep them from being comfortable sitting where they are.
You know, this person did crank. It's right over some outdoor speakers. This person might or might not have cranked some Led Zeppelin real loud the other day, and the birds didn't like it that much.
Yeah.
But the homeowner liked it a lot. All right. The number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Enough about my neighbor. This is now some email time. Hello, all, says Dawn. I listened last month to the talk of bald eagles and thought you'd like to hear what I saw last year. We have a large pond behind our house. I was watching a great blue heron fishing when suddenly a bald eagle swooped in and took him down. Feathers flew everywhere. My neighbor sent a text asking had I seen it. So, verified by two of us anyway, I never dreamed that an eagle would attack such a large bird. Scavengers they may be, but lethal killers too. What do you know about that?
It happens. The bald eagle probably was attracted to a fish that the heron might have caught. They're known to do that. They'll pirate what they can, which is one of the reasons why Ben Franklin wasn't such a fan of them as a national bird.
He wanted what? The vulture, right?
No,
turkey.
The bald eagle.
Turkey. He wanted the turkey, right?
He wanted the turkey.
The turkey.
Right.
Okay.
But in any event, that'll happen. I've seen bald eagles go after ospreys, of course, and cormorants, and in this case, a great blue heron is fair game. Yeah, and then, you know, as luck may have it, he got a lucky strike. He went in there and said, you know, easy pickings. I'm next.
All right. You had my attention at Lucky Strike, and that's a different story. Dan in Cornwall writes, we saw this hawk falcon on our trail camera recently, and we can't ID it. Probably a Cooper's hawk, but it seems to have more stripes and less color than a Cooper. I'm thinking a griff falcon. I'm not sure what that is, but here's a picture. What do you think,
beautiful
kids?
Photo.
Isn't
wow.
that nice?
Yeah. And no, Jeer falcon is out.
Yeah.
Okay. Jeer?
Jeer.
Why isn't it a hard G?
G-Y-R. Yeah,
maybe it was misspelled.
I don't know, a German word translated to English. Yeah, that
pure gent
looks like a Cooper's hawk, a young Cooper's hawk, and that's a dramatic photograph.
Beautiful,
that's amazing.
Shot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for that one. This is from Jackie in Saratoga. This is now the second year in a row. Oh, we have a bluebird family, and we love it. It's made its home around our home. They're not quiet neighbors. This is the second year in a row that one of the members of the nest continuously knocks into my teenage daughter's bedroom window, waking her nearly every morning at too early a clock. We've analyzed the behavior of the bird. It roosts in a tree and flies to the window, not the sill or surrounds. We've tried putting up photos of owls, even resorting to those plastic spiky anti-roosting tools, but to no avail. The bird keeps knocking on the window. Since this is the front of our home, we'd rather not install anything too big or ostentatious. Any suggestions to help the birds be quieter neighbors?
It sounds like it's probably seeing some reflections in the window. And so putting up some sort of decals on the window would help. In general, it's recommended to have something every 2 inches spaced apart. So there's lots of different options. If you go on to the American Bird Conservancy website, they have a lot of different options that you can use to put on the window, break up that reflection.
Yeah.
And the other thing is to, it is a reflection. So the bird is looking at a mirror image of its own self, and it's trying to defend its territory against that image, which he thinks is another bird. And to cut back on the reflection by putting a light on the inside rather than a dark inside, which creates the mirror effect.
Oh, yeah.
And have that timed so that it's on early, too early. You can turn it off during the day, and it probably won't have the same. It will work that way.
You could brick up the window, too, right?
You could, yes. Yeah. But that poor bird.
Okay. Barb in Poughkeepsie writes, we put up our first bluebird house this weekend after observing some bluebirds in our yard and around the neighborhood. Yesterday morning, we saw what we thought was a bluebird, female, hovering near the entrance, and then another one, definitely a bluebird, alight on the top of the pole. We have not seen them since. Is there anything we can do to attract them? As recommended, the birdhouse is facing east. It's approximately 5 feet off the ground. It's about 20 feet from a treed area. Would getting a mealworm feeder help? We have a couple of seed feeders nearby, but they don't seem interested. And that's from Barb in Poughkeepsie.
Well, I say go with the mealworm feeder for sure. That's rewards in many ways.
Yeah.
And as far as the nest box is concerned, look around and see if there might be some other discouraging feature in the immediate area. Probably not. But bluebirds, they're not that finicky, but sometimes you get it's the female that chooses the nest site. The male defends the territory, but the female is the one that buys the house and furnishes it.
And really?
Yeah, be the boss.
Okay.
And so, I don't know, Julie. I would leave the nest box up, and if they were looking around and don't find something else suitable,
yeah,
then they may be back.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah, and bluebirds are one of those species that will breed multiple times in a season. So even if they don't put their first brood in there, they may come later in the summer. So definitely keep it up for the whole summer. You may even have to keep it up a couple of years before they'll really be attracted.
And open it up to make sure somebody else hasn't moved in the meantime.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Such as deer mice.
Oh, interesting.
They
All
make
right.
a nice house for themselves, and, you know, visitors not welcome.
Okay, Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart are here. It's birds. One more email here with a picture of that, so I'll have to hand my phone around to you both. And then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the phones, 800-348-2551. Ken and Loretta have sent a picture from Boston Lake. This is racy stuff, actually. You're the bird breeding expert, so I'll hand this over to you. A bird that looks just like a cardinal, except that it has a white head, is hanging around with a red cardinal in our backyard, even kissing. And there's a picture that they look like they're making out. Never saw one like that. Have you? Pictures below. And there you go, Julie Hart. You take a look at those.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, so I think it's a pair of cardinals, and it looks like the female has quite a bit of leucism, so meaning that it's has that white head, so it's lacking melanism in the head.
Yeah.
So yeah, it looks like a white-headed cardinal, but it's a female.
What's with the kissing, though? Is it?
Yeah, this is part of their courtship.
You're kidding me.
And they'll feed each other and all that. Yeah, the cardinals
are cute.
Cardinals are really really often will do the courtship feeding and like the kissing a lot.
That
so
yeah,
and it's basically training for the guy. I mean, it's his job later on is to bring food to the nest, and that's kind of like a way for him to demonstrate that he's willing to do his part.
I mean, you know, they got beaks. The kissing can't be that great.
No, it's not really kissing, but it looks like it, and that's fair enough. I like it.
All right, and, you know, we have some beautiful cardinals in our backyard.
That's a redundancy.
And I, of course, know no bird calls at all, but my wife says, oh, there, listen to the cardinals. Rich, before we hit the break here, can you do the cardinal sound?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, come on.
Sometimes, I tell you, I used to be able to do a cardinal without, and it was a real convincer. I always convinced myself.
Yeah.
But now, you know, the old pucker-upper here doesn't seem to work
so
much.
So you're over the hill.
Nah, it won't.
All right, here, let's give it a shot.
Another sip of coffee later.
Okay, so we'll get him some coffee. Zach, we'll take a break. Zach's had enough. He's going to the break anyway. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. People want to see the scandalous pictures of the birds having romantic relations. And frankly, it's offensive. The number here is 800-348-2551. All right, I'll send it to the front office. They ran in here. They wanted to see it. Rich Guthrie, Julie Hart are here. It's birds today. Let's start in Wurtsboro in the Catskills. David, you're on.
Hey, on Sunday, my hound dog alerted me to something in the backyard or the front yard, actually. And it was three vultures. And I walked up there and I'm fond of vultures, actually. I think they're quite beautiful in spite of what a lot of people think they're not. But they were different than anything that I had ever seen. They had a red and yellow beak and I had never seen one that had that much color in it. And then it spread its wings like a kind of like a cormoran would, and about a 6-foot wingspan. And it was there was actually a lot of color in its wings, too. What vulture would that be? And was it a vulture?
Rich pointed a picure out from his book. And
yeah, it's a turkey vulture. And
a turkey vulture.
Yes. And what it is that they the adult turkey vultures have that red head and a very colorful beak. You have to be really close to even see that. Mm-hmm. But that's one of their features.
It was right outside of my window. It was nice. And as I said, when it spread its wings, it was absolutely gorgeous. I was like, wow, this is quite a thing.
Well, a fellow fan of vultures, I appreciate it.
I like the vultures too. I like the black vultures a lot. They got toed. They have some toed.
They got an attitude though.
They do.
You know, the turkey vulture is a little more.
And actually, as the story continued. There was one crow that did not like them hanging out in the neighborhood, and this one crow just chased their butts away. They did show up the next day, but the one small crow just wasn't having it in this neighborhood.
That's the way crows are. Yeah.
Yeah, crows.
They're pretty territorial. And the other question I have for you, and I appreciate you answering my question. The other question I have for you, I know you spend a lot of time in Florida. Do you ever go to Gatorland?
I have not. Julie, maybe.
That is one of the best birding places. It's so easy. They have the breeding marsh has more bird species than... It's like an aviary, except it's natural because the alligators protect their eggs from any of their natural predators.
Well, that's nature down in Florida, and unfortunately, those kinds of places are so few compared to all the developed land that's down there that things get concentrated.
Oh, I know, it's sad.
But another good spot that I might just bring up is Crooked Swamp, a National Audubon Society site. Is it Crooked Swamp?
Corkscrew Swamp.
That's a great name. Mm-hmm.
It is. And it's a wonderful place, National Audubon Society. And again, it's one of these places that's protected. So there is a concentration of birds that might be more spread out, but there's not enough habitat. So they all come to one place and there's great viewing opportunities. There are other places like that. This is where... having natural areas set aside is very beneficial, not only to the wildlife, but also for the people who appreciate it.
Julie, you ever been down to Corkscrew Swamp?
I have not, actually. I have not been to Florida yet.
I highly recommend it.
I usually jump over and go to the Caribbean or Central or South America.
I think you're doing all right.
Yeah.
That'll be fine. Let's go to Westfield now. Robin, you're on. Hi. How you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Robin.
Hi.
Robin's gone. Whoops. Robin freaked out. You know what? Robin wasn't ready. A little performance anxiety. Bam, done. Jeff in Salisbury, Connecticut. Jeff, you're on.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, I've got a question for you all about my nesting sites for my phoebes are being converted to Carolina wren sites. Is that a natural thing?
Fair trade.
I agree with you, and I don't like it, Jeff. That happened to me, too, and I don't like it.
The Carolina Wren's a nice little guy. I'm kind of a fan of both.
I love the fact that they're taking over a site, but I was curious about do I leave the old nest in the boxes or the area that I've made for the phoebes, and now what do I do when the phoebes come?
I would leave it up to the phoebes to decide. And if they were using a box, it doesn't sound like phoebes. They're an open cup outdoor nester.
I've got kind of like a flat area by my garage underneath an overhang that I put out.
Excellent.
Like an open area. And because it's kind of been built up by the phoebes over the years, I think the Carolina thinks he's going to have a good site there as well.
Mm-hmm. And he does.
We were all in that problem last year with the phoebes that died because of the late frost.
Mm-hmm.
So I took down a couple of of old nests, and I'm just curious if the birds might come back to there as well.
They just might. They have a propensity to return to the same nest site year after year if they're still around.
Right.
And so, yeah, good luck with that. And Carolina wrens are not a bad trade-off.
Oh, no. They look like they're going to be a great asset around here. I just haven't had this problem before, and I was wondering what I should do.
Right.
Okay, great. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you.
I think calling them an asset might be, you know, overstating it a little bit, right? They're nice. They're pleasant. You're not going to earn any interest on them.
The Caroline?
Huh?
The wren?
Yeah.
Oh, I love them. You know, they still carry their song from the south up north. And so in January, they're singing their hearts out because it's warm down there and it's cold up here. Nothing like bringing a little sunshine to our backyards.
Okay. You know, we saw a bird. We were out the other day taking the air, and we saw a bird in the backyard. It looked for all the world, Julie, like a miniature woodpecker, but it was the size of a wren or one of those small little house sparrows. Any ideas?
Was it on a tree? Or
no,
was it
walking around the lawn.
Walking on the lawn?
Yeah.
A small...
It looked like a little woodpecker.
Not a nuthatch.
No, but the house is a nuthatch. Let me tell you something.
Huh. I don't know.
All right,
Rich, you have any ideas?
Maybe it was a woodpecker, a flicker.
A little one?
But
they're kind of biggish. They're bigger than a robin. But
no.
And I like Julie's idea of the nuthatch. They will, you know, give it up and walk on the ground for a little while, but usually they're on the side of a tree.
All right.
And the other thing is maybe it was just an ordinary sparrow with some sort of mangled tail.
No.
You're making it look like a woodpecker.
You know what? I'll take a picture because you're Mr. Skeptical, and I know now you're back in the house.
I'm
and you're
curious now. Okay. I want to know what I'm like.
You saw a Bigfoot, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, right up behind the shed. Yeah.
All right.
All right. Dave is in Lakeville, Connecticut. Dave, you're on. Hey, Dave. Hello, Dave. Hey, how you doing, buddy? You're on.
Oh. This is Dave. Yeah. Hey, I'm glad you caught me. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm glad I caught you. Go ahead.
Yeah, here we are.
So, hey, two things real quick. The public or the private school where I work in Lakeville, Connecticut, has ravens nesting right on the front of the building.
Oh, excellent.
They've kind of become our new mascot. Some of the maintenance guys wanted them out of there because they wanted to pressure wash the building, but we won out, and they are very cool.
Awesome.
Good for you. Yeah.
Nice.
So I have to go, but I have a quick question. About 50 years ago, when I was 15 years old, we had hundreds and hundreds of screech owls around our house one morning. I mean, they were both brown and red faced, and there were literally hundreds, if not thousands, of them in all the trees around our house. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
Negative.
No, me neither.
That's extraordinary. I mean, a few, maybe a dozen, you know, had a very successful brood hatch. And they will come out in numbers and congregate, but anything over 10 might be a lot.
Dave, how many were there?
This was literally, I mean, it was a long time ago, but I remember it well. It was hundreds.
Wow.
Hundreds. Every branch of every big maple tree was covered.
That's incredible.
Wow. You don't have a photo by any chance.
No, it was long before cell phones, that's for sure.
Sounds like a scene from The Omen. Damien!
Unfortunately,
special,
I'll mention that screech owls and other predators have taken a nosedive in populations. And unfortunately, I think it has a lot to do with rodenticide poisoning. People put out these packets of poison, the mouse or the little... chipmunk eats it, goes out, wobbles around because it's not well, easy pickings. The owl hawk eats it.
That's not good.
And that takes care of that.
Well, that almost did the eagles in, right? And now they made a nice comeback.
Yes, by the ban of the poisons. And that's, we got to start thinking about doing that in this world because the serious decline in things like American kestrels and screech owls and even the bald eagle, they've come down with these pesticide poisonings.
All right, Dave, thanks a lot for that one. I'm glad you made it. 800-348-2551 is our number. Julie Hart is here. Rich Guthrie is here. The old gang is back together. It's birds, and let's go to Wurtsboro. And Michael, you're on.
Hi, second caller from Wurtsboro, amazingly enough.
Yeah.
I don't know David, but hello, Dave. Two things. I just moved up here from Florida, Sarasota, where, for your information, there's a wonderful bird watching area called Celery Fields, if anyone is ever in Sarasota.
I've heard of it.
What I noticed in Sarasota is lots of ospreys nesting all the time. So my question to you is, do all birds or most birds, small and large, nest during the same season, or do many nest across all four seasons? Second minor question is, up here in Wurtsboro, I've noticed a lot of juncos. Is that normal, and do juncos migrate? Thank you.
Yeah, shall I start with the ospreys? So it really depends on the species. A lot of the migratory species will only breed during the summer months. For some of the, like, ospreys in Florida, there are some resident birds there, and so those are the ones that are taking advantage of the nice warm weather year-round, and they're breeding year-round. So it really depends on their migratory behavior and their location and the weather conditions and that kind of stuff, whether or not they're breeding year-round or just during the summer. Juncos, yes, that is normal right now. There's a lot of juncos. They are migratory, mostly more of a elevational migrant here. So in the next few weeks, maybe a month, they'll start moving up a little bit higher in elevation. So they'll start to disappear from our backyards a little bit.
Interesting. And they migrate sort of in a surge. So the numbers from New Jersey to the Carolinas are kind of like resting at our doorstep. And now that we have this weather episode coming up, they'll just hang out for a few days until things look a little better, and then they'll move on. So what you're getting is a sort of like a buildup and concentration at the doorstep.
Mm. Mm-hmm. All right, Michael.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. And thank you for the tip on Celery Fields. You've been there, huh?
I've not been there, but I know of it.
You know,
yes,
of
it's
it.
It's on the West Coast, and I haven't visited the West Coast in quite a while.
Oh, it's lovely. It's lovely. Okay, so I had a question for you, Rich, but now I forgot what it was.
Answer is yes.
You don't know what the question is. Let's go to Brunswick, and Lee, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Lee from Brunswick. I was wondering if you could speak to a possible threat to the population of cowbirds. I've lived in the same area for 20 years, and I always had a good group of cowbirds every year. Last year, I had none. This year, on the first day of spring, fortunately, I saw a pair on my front steps, and I was just thrilled to see them again. But I'm wondering, is there a threat to their population?
I don't think so. It's just a matter of here or there with their numbers. And frankly, I wouldn't miss cowbirds if their numbers were to disappear.
You're a hater, are you?
Not a hater. Okay. But, you know, they're kind of like a natural feature, but we've manipulated their distribution so much that they are a hazard to our native nesting bird species.
Julie.
Oh.
Did you want to add anything to that?
I think I recall in the fall that there were a lot of people saying that they didn't see their large flocks of grackles and redwings and cowbirds. Mm-hmm. So they were acting differently this year, but I don't think that means that there was a decline in their population.
Lee.
I see. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. I remember what I was going to ask you, too. So, you know, it's getting spring now, and it's nice. We've had a couple of nice days. And now we have weather that's coming, and it's going to flat out stink. Okay?
Yeah.
It could be a lot of snow. It could be, depending on where you are, rain. These birds that are making their way back, are they in any way endangered by this?
Not really. They've dealt with this sort of stuff for millennia, ever since they started migrating after the Ice Age. And so each year they're oftentimes faced with this kind of weather changes on their way north. And some of them will be affected, but for the most part, they'll just hang out, wait for it to pass over, and continue on.
Where would they
go? Interesting.
You don't know?
Oh, no, I was going to say that I would have answered that question differently.
Well, go ahead. We have time.
I think that, so, for example, last week or a week and a half ago when we had the big ice storm here in Albany, I do think that we're getting, because of climate change, we're getting a lot warmer weather earlier in the season. And so we're getting more of these freezing rain episodes. And I do think that some of the birds that normally start breeding early are suffering, and they will fail in their first nesting attempt because of the more extreme. So, like, dealing with snow or dealing with rain is a lot easier than dealing with ice.
Yeah.
Oh, I agree with you.
Yeah. Does that mean that eventually, and maybe not even that far away from now, they'll be going north? They will not be in this area, some of those birds?
No.
That's a stretch. And some of them are receding northward.
Why is it a stretch? That's just what I said. What do you mean it's a stretch? I just said that.
Well, I had a second thought while I was formulating
You just wanted to say no to me. You know what, Zach? I've had it. We're taking a break. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. It's Birds. We'll be back. Fox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you. It's Birds today. It's a raucous time with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. Rich, you wanted a retort. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to agree with you, Ray, despite the fact that you were wrong to begin with. But no, there are some bird species are receding from their southernmost part of their range, northward bound. And I bring to mind the endangered species, the Bicknell's thrush, which is a mountaintop nesting bird in the Catskills. And used to be Mount Greylock in Massachusetts. And over the last 20, 30 years, the numbers seem to have changed, and they seem to be losing out to climate change, differences in their environment.
Okay. And keep going. It's fine.
Well, that's about it.
Julie? All right.
No, that's good. I think you said we have a lot of email questions.
We sure do. But I want to make sure everybody vents their spleen before we
get. Let's try to.
All right, here we go. Eileen writes, we were on Saddleback Mountain in Maine last week at around 3,600 feet when we saw what was either a pine grosbeak or a white-winged crossbill. Is there a better likelihood that it was one of the other?
Ooh, it could have been either.
Yeah, either or both.
Yeah.
Okay.
Size. Pine grosbeak is quite a bit larger than a white-winged crossbill.
Okay, so that's a clue.
That is one clue, yes.
All right. Yep.
Both beautiful birds.
This is from Mike in Saratoga. I live in downtown Saratoga Springs. I put up a birdhouse about 6 feet from the ground on a fence facing south. I notice a bluebird checking it out today. What are the chances this location will work for bluebirds? Birdhouse is at the top of a fence, so there is a squirrel commuter traffic. there is squirrel commuter traffic running by. I love that. All right, what do you think?
I think they're not going to stay there. What do you think?
Yeah, you would have to put some sort of a predator guard around the post or around the nest box itself. And there are little tubular extensions that you could put on the hole, the entrance hole, that will keep the discourage things like squirrels, raccoons, and house sparrows from getting in there. But but good luck with that. But bluebirds will nest in city environments, so don't be totally discouraged. But I'm...
Okay.
Be lucky. With luck, a Carolina wren will find it.
All right. Now, let me just ask this question. This is the second time we've had, and I think it was both in relation to bluebirds, this question of the direction of where it's facing. Why does that matter? South, east, why?
I don't think it does matter. I mean, the books say face it south, face it east, and here's what the story is. The nest box is a imitation of a woodpecker nest hole. And I think it might be an interesting study to see how many woodpecker nest holes are facing a particular direction. I like to say put the nest hole facing where you can see it best and go with that. The bluebirds will kind of like, if the environment, if the habitat is suitable, that'll be good enough for them.
Hmm? Yeah, and I would just add, you know, if there is like a prevailing weather pattern, then have the opening away from the wind or the rain would be coming in. But,
gotcha.
You know, obviously around here it can come from any direction, depending on the time of year.
You know, we have these satellite dishes on the roof, big ones, and I go up.
You mean here?
Yeah.
That's how I find this place. I see it from the highway. I come.
And so I go up, take the air now and again up there, and there are holes, vent holes in the back of these things. There are birds' nests in there.
Oh.
And there's one particular one where the wind just whips in there, and there's tons of birds. They don't care. They're just in that.
It's warm and safe. Yeah.
They're my friends now. I talk to them. Kathy writes, I'm in Greenfield, Massachusetts. I saw a beautiful red bird visiting the feeders out back this morning, which, according to my Peterson's field guide, was a male summer tanager.
Could happen.
Yeah.
Very, very, very rare. Emphasis on very.
Yeah.
But we have had overwintering summer tanagers in our listening area, New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts. I don't know about Vermont, but this is once in a decade type of rarity. But it could happen. Never say never.
Mm-hmm. But get a photo for sure.
Yeah, pictures count.
Send it to us.
But it could have been a chrysalis cardinal, one that lost his little mitre cap.
How would he lose it?
Just feather
molting.
Wear.
Yeah.
Okay. Would it come back if it was molting?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Barbara writes, and I think, Barbara is, remember we talked at the start of the show about this neighborhood crank who wanted to get rid of the bird nest under his
own
rank?
Yeah.
What a jerk he was.
Yeah, I agree.
Barbara writes from Ulster County, I had phoebes making very messy nests on my porch light right next to the front door. I removed it, and they built it back within a couple of hours. Finally, I put that fine plastic netting bunched up that I used to keep deer away from plants over the top of the light. No more nests.
There you go.
There you go.
That's what you can, or your neighbor can try.
That's right.
It's sort of a peaceful way of settling a borderline.
And you're okay with that?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it'll be up to them to find a new site, and they will.
All right. Fair. Well, they go to the neighbor's house. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Debbie says, is it okay to clean out bird nests in bird houses now? Also,
yes.
I have a tiny bird, maybe a wren, who has a bird house full of sticks. I should think this would make an uncomfortable home. That's from Debbie.
Yes, now is definitely the time to be cleaning out your nest boxes in preparation for this breeding season. A box full of sticks, like all the way up to the roof, sounds just like a house wren.
Nah.
Carolina wrens tend to have a little more moss in there. But yeah, so probably a house wren.
Cool.
Yeah, kick them out. they'll be back, though.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to our phones. We'll get to the emails again if we have time. The number is 800-348-2551. Nancy's in Shandaken. Hello, Nancy.
Good afternoon. I love this show.
Thank you.
So my husband and I, we love crows, and we feed them every day. And like clockwork, they line up, you know, in the trees near the house to get fed.
I love
and
you.
And we would just love to, like, get a little closer to them. I mean, even if we pass by the window to look at them, the slightest motion and they're off. I mean, is there any hope that over time we, you know, can get a little closer to them, you know, physically closer?
Yes. And keep working on it. The trick to do is to be consistent and patient. Find yourself a comfortable chair out there where you can sit there with your arm outstretched with a nice peanut right at your fingertips.
Oh.
And then two more, a little arm's length beyond that. And and just sit there.
Oh.
You know, just wait them out.
Okay. Okay, wonderful. And they would come up to our hand and take it right from our hand?
Well, in time. Give it a decade or two.
My other quick question is, do ravens and crows ever hang out together?
No.
Mm-mm.
Really?
No, they don't crows
don't
not like ravens.
They don't.
Huh. Ravens would predate.
Oh, okay.
Well, ravens will predate crow nests. So crows will try to keep the ravens away.
Okay.
I see. All righty. Well, thank you so much.
Nancy, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. Andy's in Conway, Massachusetts. Andy, go ahead.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
I was out kayaking with some friends about a week and a half ago, and we witnessed two bald eagles seemingly fighting with each other in the sky. And about 10 or 15 minutes later, we had a grouping of probably close to 20 eagles flying above, soaring above, something I've never seen before in my life. There were clearly, we couldn't count them all because there were so many, but there were clearly 6 to 8 bald eagles and then other ones that didn't have the white tail and head on them. Mm-hmm. Just curious what we witnessed, whether that's an unusual occurrence or have you ever seen anything like that. So some of them were soaring very, very high.
Yeah, I was out this weekend and I also saw several groupings of eagles. So I think they're just on the move right now. They're migrating and getting back to their breeding range, breeding territories. There are, I did notice a lot of immature birds mixed in as well, which could have been some of the ones you were seeing without the white tails. And then in terms of the two birds that you saw, the adults that looked like they were like fighting in midair, it could either have been a territorial dispute or it could have actually been the pair. And they could be testing each other and playing a little bit and getting to know each other. Or
so it's a courtship?
It could be, yes. It could be courtship or territorial.
Rich. It's pretty dramatic when I believe it is courtship between a male and a female, and they do lock talons and tumble down.
Wow.
Almost hitting the ground until they break it off and then fly back up again and go through this dance one more time.
Wow. Yeah,
it's very spectacular. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's kind of scary to watch, too.
Go ahead, Andy.
You fear for them. Any thought that the two events were related in any way?
Not really. Julie said what happens is that the birds don't necessarily flock together. They just find a favorable condition and all join in on that. And they were finding a good thermal wind current and all getting on that free ride all at once.
Yeah. I mean, we were looking up and kept saying, oh, my God, there's another one way up
there. Exactly.
I'm seeing more and more.
Exactly. That's so cool. Yeah. Andy, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much. Let's go to Stone Ridge and we'll stay on the bald eagle topic here. Dale, you're on.
Hey there. You might have just answered my question. We had two mature bald eagles land on the lawn the other night and stay there for like 6 or 7 hours. There were a lot of feathers everywhere, a few spots of blood, and we weren't sure if they were wounded. Eventually, they did fly off, but we were curious what was going on.
So they were just lying around?
I mean, that sounds more like territorial to
me. Yeah, but I'm wondering, too, if there was some meal on the ground there that they were both sharing.
Some
dead animal, a raccoon or a skunk or something that they were, that they
there
found.
There wasn't. We got a really good look at them with binoculars, and we were close enough.
Okay.
We were afraid they were wounded, but then they did take off eventually.
So what do you think of that?
Well, it sounded like a bonded pair. Tolerating each other's company over whatever it was there on the ground.
Tolerating each other's company. Oh, there's some metaphors there.
Staring lovingly into each other's eyes.
All right, Dale, you want to follow up at all?
So you think it was a pair?
Yes, I do.
What's a pair? Oh, okay, that's interesting. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
It's an interesting observation, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, to be sitting for hours in one location, I think is
and to have
kind
no
of
fear of predators. I mean,
well,
you're an eagle.
Bald
I know.
Eagles, they don't have many predators.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Here's an email from Bonnie. This morning, I was walking at Hovey Pond in Queensbury, I saw three white heron-like birds that took off flying when we got close. I was with my dog. They looked exactly like the great blue heron, but they were smaller and fully white. I couldn't identify them on my Merlin bird app. What do you guys think?
Great egrets.
Mm-hmm.
It's early for them, but not exceptionally early. I've seen and heard a few reports on eBird of great egrets in our listening area already. It is early, and this is part of the... You know, that change that Julie was talking about earlier about unprecedented weather episodes.
All right. This is from Arn, who tried to get in last time you guys were on when we were talking about the bald eagle sighting that my wife and I had. And Arn writes in. Last month, I began the show, me, Ray, with a story about the backyard eagle. And then Arn takes it. After that, there were a lot of calls about bald eagles. I didn't get on, but I wanted to add one of my more interesting stories about an eagle sighting. I was at a large frozen pond in Petersham, Mass., because I was about to ice skate. There was no open water, but I saw an eagle circling above the pond. Suddenly, an otter popped up out of a hole in the ice with a big fish in his mouth. He walked maybe a foot or two from the hole, put the fish down, and immediately the eagle dove down toward the otter. The otter jumped into the hole. The eagle took the fish. That apparently explained why the eagle had been overhead for a while.
I agree.
Yep.
That is so cool.
I wish I was there.
You know we have a term for this.
What is that?
Kleptoparasite.
Kleptoparasite?
Yes. So there's a lot of birds. There's some birds that that's the only way that they get food.
Really?
Is by stealing it from other birds. So frigate birds will do that. Gulls are kleptoparasites, right? You see them stealing food all the time when you're at the beach.
Yep.
And eagles are another one that will do that. They will also kill their prey sometimes, but they'll also steal.
But how good does the eyesight have to be for an eagle to be circling and not just seeing through water, but seeing through ice?
Yeah, but my guess is that it was anticipating, it wasn't waiting for it to happen.
Oh, interesting.
He's been there before.
Yeah.
All right, let's grab another phone call here before we wrap it up with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie, and we'll go to Strasburg. Michelle, you're on.
Yes, hi. I have a question. I think they're gray herons or blue herons, and they're on a little island right by the Poughkeepsie Yacht Club in Hyde Park. And this is the second season in March. We see them flying back and forth to the shore and to these trees where it looks like they have nests. And I'm wondering, are they feeding their young at this early, or are they making the nests?
They're starting their nesting season now.
Yep.
They come back and get busy right away. They don't waste any time.
Mm-hmm.
And
they fly back and forth, you know, in the early morning and in the late evening to the nest. It's interesting.
They're out shopping for furniture and and also take out lunch. So they're, you know, but interesting.
When would they have the baby? Usually?
Well, they'll be laying eggs really
soon.
Quickly.
Yeah, they'll be laying eggs soon. And then what, a month after that, I think?
They start hatching out, and then it becomes really chaotic.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, there you go, Michelle. Thanks for the call. Mike and Fran write in from Albany. We've had bear problems in the past and wondered if you have any idea when the bird feeder should be taken in this year.
I think it's always recommended April 1st, I think is the DEC recommendation. Isn't that right?
Yeah, and I've already had some reports of early risers getting out there and wreaking havoc. So, you know, if you got bears in the neighborhood, pay attention.
Yeah. That was from Albany, too. So there are beer, not beers. There are beers floating around. Oh, where's my mind?
Yes.
Joel in Blooming Grove writes, when can I stop feeding the birds?
Never.
Yeah, right. Keep it up. And if nothing else, hummingbird feeders and natural flowers and out in the yard would be great.
Mm-hmm. M writes in, is there any way to attract indigo buntings or orioles? Do they ever come to Western Mass? I've only seen one once in 20 years.
Oh.
Yes.
Orioles, you can feed them at your feeders. You can put out oranges and grape jelly and things like that, and the orioles will come right in. Buntings are a little bit harder.
Yeah, they don't come in, except that the first week of May, right around May 5th, one or two will show up with the goldfinches, and then for some reason they disappear.
Yep.
All right, Julie Hart, we're about out of time here.
Yes.
Are you still soliciting people to
join
the Bird Atlas?
Yes.
Explain.
And so we've been having lots of people calling in with lots of cool behaviors. Please submit those observations. We use eBird for data entry. So go to eBird.org/AtlasNY, and that's where you can enter all of your really cool bird breeding behaviors.
And Rich, are you still the gatekeeper over there at the eBird?
The eBird, not so much with the Atlas Project,
okay.
But that's all right. RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
All right.
Cards and letters and photos, more.
All right. But no checks. Remember, this is public radio. Support comes from the Hyde Collection in Glens Falls, live cinema events with Met Live, National Theater Live, and great art on screen, HydeCollection.org. to learn more. At East Branch Studio, featuring home energy consultations at net zero ready custom and pre-designed East Branch homes, eastbranchstudio.com. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart for being here. Thank you for calling. Thank you for emailing. Apologies to everybody whose question did not get answered. We'll do it again next month. And the two guests really want to do it more often, so I'm pretty well booked, but you never know. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Lightning Eddie Rosen, who screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Home Repairs and Improvement with our pal, Darren Tracy. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.